Okay, our friends. So today we are reading another story for you about the Pacific Northwest. Because, you know, it's important to know stuff. Not everyone lives in North America. And even if they did live in North America, not everyone lives in the Pacific Northwest. So we thought we would give you a little bit of history, perhaps, about what it's like here and some of the stuff that's happened here. And now this story is partially for my friends who live across the pond in England, because we've got some commonalities here in this area, and I can't wait to read to you the story. It is called The Pig War. It was written by Emma Bland Smith, and it's illustrated by Allison Jay. And friends, I cannot wait to give you all the details, because there's a subtitle for this book. The subtitle says, How a Porcine Tragedy Taught England and America to Share. We must do that, mustn't we? But before we tell today's story, I do want to mention just briefly that we have patrons out there, friends, people who help us make sure that we have new and interesting stories every single day. And to thank them for their efforts, I would like to give them a shout out. So Quentin and Karen, you know, there's just something to brotherly love and getting along that's pretty important. So we hope that you enjoy today's story, because I'm sure you guys definitely do those things. And we want to say thank you so much for supporting us. So let's read it. Today's story is read by Mommy and... Who are ya? Little Petey.
No, I'm Lil Petey.
Oh, Lil Petey.
L-I-L Petey.
Lil. Oh, I get that. I love that. Well, hello, Lil Petey. Have I got a story for you. It's got some porkers in it, so buckle up. Here we go. This is a true tale about two mighty nations, an ill-fated pig, and a most unusual war. It is also a story about sharing. The date is June 15th, 1859. The setting is a small but lovely island called San Juan, off the green coast of today's Pacific Northwest. Was the island American? Was it British? That depended on who you asked. The characters. Now, a few dozen men who had gotten along okay for the most part for some years. What were they doing there? Well, the Brits were raising sheep for a powerful British corporation called the Hudson Bay Company. The Americans? Well, most of them were former miners looking for a bit of land to settle down on. And the mood was about to change for the worse. On this spring day, an American settler named Lyman Cutler looked out his window and spied a large pig rooting in his potato patch. The pig was British, or at least its owner was. Or at least its owner was. Now, the Brits and the Yanks, by the way, Yanks is a term that describes the people who live in North America. Okay. Now, the Brits and the Yanks were on fairly good terms. And true, they'd fought a terrible war, America's War of Independence, nearly a century before. And then, about 30 years later, they'd clashed again in the War of 1812. But since then, things had calmed down, and they were, if not exactly friends, then at least polite rivals in the exploration and settlement of the West. But still, tempers can flare. And on this fateful morning, Lyman's did. Maybe Lyman hadn't had his coffee. Maybe he'd slept poorly, maybe. He was looking forward to boiling those potatoes for his supper, maybe. He was thinking of the many painful miles he'd rode to buy the potato seed. But for whatever reason, when he saw that pig, he got cranky. He acted without thinking. And the pig paid the ultimate price. Poor pig. Instantly, Lyman regretted his rashness. He hurried to the pig's owner, Charles Griffin, and offered to pay for the animal. A gleam in his eye, Charles asked Lyman for $100, and all would be forgiven. Simple, right? Not quite. For $100 was an outrageous sum at that time. For that kind of money, a person could buy a nice plot of land. A farm laborer only earned about $200 per year. So he's almost asking for half of his year's salary. Well, Lyman refused to pay. There's a better chance for lightning to strike you than for you to get $100 for that hog, he said. Charles was affronted. You Americans are a nuisance on this island, he bellowed. In Charles' eyes, the island was British. I consider it American soil, retorted Lyman, and this was too much for Charles. By this time, he was more than a little cranky himself, so he told an official who threatened to have Lyman arrested and all his fellow Americans evicted from the island. And the same day, Charles sat down and wrote to his boss, James Douglas, the governor of the Crown Colonies of Vancouver Island and British Columbia. That should do it, he figured. Well, but those Yanks, they knew their way around a fountain pen too. And they wrote a letter to General William Harney, the American military commander, and signed it. All 18 of them. Now the two bosses, Harney and Douglas, may or may not have been cranky. We don't know. But we do know that they were both, it must be said, on the hot-headed side. Harney promptly dispatched a company of 64 men under the command of Captain George Pickett. The Americans must have sighed a breath of relief. Such a fearsome display of power would surely make the Brits back off. Simple, right? Not quite. Because just 2 days later, the British ship, highly armed, commanded by Captain Geoffrey Hornby and loaded with several hundred men, steamed into the bay. Oh, dear. What started as a pig incident had turned into a pig argument and was fast escalating into a pig situation. Pickett was nervous. Well, who wouldn't be? He was also, like his boss, a bit of a hothead. He asked for reinforcements and hundreds. He asked for reinforcements, and hundreds more American troops joined Pickett's forces on the island. Hornby, though less of a hothead than his boss, the governor, likely felt a tad nervous himself at this point. Two more British ships steamed in, and soon the bay and the Golden Hills overlooking it teemed with British and American ships and soldiers, all on alert. From shore, building a fort for their cannons, the Americans recalled the last 2 years they'd fought with Britain. So many young men killed. So many children orphaned. Did they want to suffer that tragedy again? From their ships, aiming their own cannons, they had 64 in all, the British pondered their tentative relationship with the United States. Did they want to reignite the hostile attitudes of the past? Both sides waited, anxious, wondering if a scuffle over a pig had gotten just a tad out of hand. The pig war was about to begin. Tense days passed. The British captain, Hortonby, taking a risk, ignored the governor's orders to land Marines on shore, brave fellow. Then, unsure what to do next, Hornby waited for his superior, Rear Admiral R. Lampert Baines. Another good move. Baines was even less trigger-happy than Hornby, and when he arrived and heard about the situation, he exclaimed, or so they say, "Tut, tut, no, no." And then he ordered his troops to sit tight and added, in so many words, "Hold your fire." Whew. Hold your fire means do not fire your weapon. You see, they all had weapons. They were soldiers. And he was saying, do not fire your weapons. We don't want anybody to get hurt. That's what hold your fire means.
Why did he ask his men to hold his fire when he's on the bad guy's side?
Well, he was just on one side. They weren't necessarily good. There's no good or bad side here, really. That's an unusual situation. It's a war over a pig. What they really should have done is buried in the sand, had a luau, and everybody had pulled pork sandwiches. That's what I would have done. On the American side, Lieutenant Colonel Silas Casey took over from Pickett. He, too, was admiringly lacking in hot-headedness. Do you know what it means to be hot-headed? I keep using that word. I would like to know if you know what it means. In the book, it says hot-headed. Do you know what it means? So if you are hot-headed, it means that you have a fiery temper. Do you know in the movie Inside Out how there's like the little fiery guy who's anger, the anger emotion? That's kind of what it means. You're that guy, okay? He rode out to one of the British ships and tried to talk things through, but still neither side would back down. By this time, the government bigwigs had heard what was happening. By the way, a bigwig is a guy who's in charge of, like, important things. Somebody who's fancy. And they're wearing big wigs. See what I'm saying? Okay. A squabble over a pig in a potato patch was about to plunge two nations into war. President James Buchanan, far off in Washington, D.C., was alarmed, and so were the British officials. Buchanan sent a message. "Don't shoot unless they shoot first," was the order, but in much fancier language. And with the approval of the Brits, the president dispatched a proven negotiator. Hastily, or as hastily as possible for a time when it took 6 weeks to cross the country, General Winfield Scott arrived to help the two sides work things out. General Scott, it will not be disputed, was the least hot-headed of the whole gang. He worked his magic. Now, maybe the soldiers missed their families, and maybe both sides had cooled off, and maybe General Scott was a persuasive speaker, or maybe all of the above, but for whatever reason, the men put down their weapons, and the islanders agreed to share. Joint occupation, the officials called it. Following the agreement, most of the soldiers left. All but one of the warships sailed back out of the harbor, and no more than 100 men on each side were allowed to remain. None of the artillery guns were ever fired except one. On a landmark day in November of 1859, as General Scott prepared to leave after negotiating for peace, the Americans gave him a one-gun salute. Well deserved. And now it was time to share. Simple, right? Actually, this time, quite right. The residents established two bases, American camp and English camp, and together they improved the island. They fixed the roads, they set up a binational patrol to keep order, they even attended each other's holidays. every summer, the Americans celebrated the 4th of July and invited the British. And every May 24th, the British threw a birthday bash for their Queen Victoria. And the Americans always joined in. The raucous games included horse racing, blindfolded wheelbarrow races, and balancing on a greased pole off the end of a ship. They knew how to have fun. Did Lyman participate in these good times? Probably. He was known as a fun-loving guy. Did he ever feel just a teensy bit embarrassed about all the fuss he caused? Let's hope so, for goodness sake. Well, today, San Juan is part of the United States. English Camp and American Camp are still there. Flags waving, a reminder of the past. The island, it is true, is small. But what happened there was very, very big. Two countries worked hard to share, to look past their differences and to get along, and they did all that. And no one got hurt, except the pig. And friends, if there's only one thing we can learn from this example in this book, it is this. You can get along with people, even if you don't agree with them. You can find a way to find something that you have in common. And then you can have a luau and have pulled pork sandwiches. And that is the end.
Wait, why did that guy kill the pig?
He was hot-headed, it said. Yeah. Or maybe he just really wanted bacon. Understandable.
If you like the show, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. It really does help the show to grow. Thank you for listening.